My name is Dr. Sarah Metcalf, one of the medical editors of Australian Family Physicians, and joining me today is the author of one of our feature articles for this month, Workplace Bullying, What's It Got to Do with General Practice, Dr. Deborah Askew. And Dr. Askew is a senior lecturer in the discipline of general practice at the University of Queensland and also the research director at Inala Indigenous Health Service in Brisbane. Welcome, Deb.
Thanks, Sarah.
Now, can we first just discuss some of the definitions of what behaviours actually constitute bullying in the workplace?
Sure. There's a bit of debate, I guess, still about exactly what workplace bullying is. One of the essential features of workplace bullying is that it is persistent behaviours over time. So like a single incident of, you know, someone yelling at a colleague isn't workplace bullying. But when that occurs when it recurs repeatedly over a long period of time, so someone yelling at someone, being abusive, telling stories to superiors, physical violence that recurs all the time, excluding colleagues, and someone being excluded from meetings, having information not being relayed to them so they can't do their job properly. It's sort of any behaviours that undermine a person's self-confidence or their professional self-esteem are actually defined as workplace bullying. And I think one of the really interesting things is, and this was something that I really grappled with when I started doing any research in this area, was that it's actually not it's the impact on the victim that counts, not the intention of the perpetrator. So it's not someone doesn't have to set out to bully someone, to put someone down continually, but it's their behaviours could be such that the person is being affected. And that's where it becomes quite, I guess, it's difficult because the perpetrator is like, oh, but I didn't mean to. And think, well, that's not actually the point. You are doing this.
Yes, and it has to be about the effect on the individual. And so, it means that our definitions are somewhat broader because that can be, you know, a fairly individual thing, I would imagine.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So I guess an official definition, the one that was recommended by the parliamentary committee that was convened to look at workplace bullying last year, in 2012, their official definition that they've recommended adopting is that it is repeated unreasonable behaviour directed towards a worker or group of workers that creates a risk to health and safety. So it's very, very broad.
Yeah.
And I think that they've deliberately done that, so it's not saying that this behaviour is bullying, but that behaviour isn't bullying. Because, as I said before, the key thing is the impact on the victim that actually counts.
Yeah. And that inquiry that you mentioned actually found that workplace bullying in Australia seems to be very common.
That's exactly right. It wasn't that they had over 300 witnesses reporting instances of bullying that they had actually experienced. So you think if over 300 people actually came forward to report cases of bullying, there must be many, 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 many more that either don't realise that they're being bullied or are too frightened or can't be bothered coming forward to present to the parliamentary committee. There's been a financial cost associated between $6 and $36 billion annually lost because of bullying through lost productivity, absenteeism, greater staff turnover, and higher rates of illness, accidents, disability, and suicide. So yes, you're absolutely right. It's an enormous problem with a great, huge cost to the Australian workplace, but I guess ultimately it's actually Australian society.
Yes, and probably underestimated because, as you say, it's such a difficult thing to measure. Imagine a lot of people exposed to this behaviour would, as you say, you know, change jobs or sort of act in another way to change the situation.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And workplace bullying, it's important to say, is illegal, and there is a legal framework that it sits within. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I guess I have to say right from the outset here that I'm no legal expert, so when I was trying to unravel this for the paper that's in this month, AFP, it just all got too much for me, and I thought, like, I won't even go there. I'll just include in the paper what I've been able to read that was in the parliamentary inquiry and from a variety of websites. But yes, it is illegal. It's covered by occupational health and safety legislation, anti-discrimination legislation, industrial legislation and awards, workplace agreement and common law. So although there's not actually one specific law that it sits within, and that's another thing that becomes quite difficult, and that was another recommendation of the parliamentary committee, that the process of complaining about bullying and doing something about it would somehow be simplified. And they did recommend the establishment of a national body that both employees and employers could go to for impartial advice.
Yeah.
And I guess then the other part of that about the legal framework is that because workplaces have a legal responsibility to ensure the safety of their employees, if an employee is being bullied within the workplace, it's actually the employer's legal responsibility to do something about it.
And that comes down to workplaces having, you know, workplace bullying policy that is enforced and upheld and all of those things.
Exactly. So it's workplaces have to take the issue seriously. And I think it's too easy to, if someone says I'm being bullied, to blame the victim rather than say, okay, there's an issue going on here. And it was very interesting that just as I was writing this paper, that in 1 week I had two people that I work with talk to me about the fact that they were being bullied. They didn't say they were being bullied, but they were just reporting behaviours that I said, you're being bullied. You've got a legal and moral right not to be bullied. You know, you can do something about this.
And it is, it's that failure of realisation and the tendency to, blame oneself or, look for alternative solutions. It's just not something that's very much out in the open, is it?
That's right. If I'm being bullied, therefore it's something I'm doing wrong, rather than I'm being bullied and that's not right.
Yeah, and certainly in that vein, the medical workforce is not immune from this. I suspect many of us have either experienced bullying ourselves, in our hospital training years or at least witnessed it. But it's important to consider that the same behaviours can occur in the general practice setting. And in the article, you give some examples of just how that might manifest and how we might recognise it.
That's right. So, I hasten to say these were hypothetical examples, and I wasn't in any way implying that I am aware of this occurring in any general practice or have been told of it occurring. But the sort of hypothetical examples I gave were constant criticism or negativity by the senior GP towards junior GPs or towards the practice nurses or administrative staff. Practice manager constantly rostering admin staff on or a particular admin person onto the worst rosters or changing rosters at the last minute, ensuring that admin person never has no sort of security within the workplace. Hurtful attack, repeated hurtful comments or attacks or making fun of a staff member because of their look, their sexuality, their gender, their race, their beliefs, their education, their economic background. These are all sorts of things that it's very easy to imagine them happening. Deliberate sabotage or withholding of critical information or resources that prevents the staff member from actually doing their job properly. So, didn't I tell you that we have changed our policy on that? Or, I must have forgotten to mention, we had a staff meeting last week and we discussed this issue. My mistake.
Okay.
And then also, GPs can be bullied GP, all general practice staff can be bullied by patients or their family. There's sort of comments about, repeated comments that the GP is incompetent or doesn't know what they're doing or is not fit to practice. And it doesn't take much for, you know, those sort of comments to just keep going and keep going and keep going to the point where you think, hang on, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe they are right.
Yeah.
So, as I say, these are just hypothetical examples, but it's very, very easy to imagine them occurring. All members of the general practice staff have the potential to be bullied and to be bullied. So what we did some research that was published last year on bullying in the medical workforce, and interestingly we found that bullying was widespread, and it was spread equally between the genders and between age groups. So you can't say, oh, the younger female staff are more susceptible. That wasn't the case at all. And so within the general practice, all staff are susceptible to bullying and to being bullied. And it occurs where there's a power differential, and that power can be because of hierarchy, so more senior to more junior, but it also can be, as we all know, power doesn't always lie with the most senior person. In a bullying relationship, the bully tends to have power over the person that's being bullied.
Yes, absolutely. And so if a GP, found themselves in a situation where either they felt they were being bullied or perhaps were concerned that a member of their practice staff was being bullied, is there an approach that they could use to dealing with this situation?
Yes, there is. First thing is that it has to be taken seriously. It has to be, let's talk about it.
Mm.
And then there needs to be some process of negotiation or mediation, if possible, for the bullied person, need to really ensure that they're okay, that their mental health is okay. Because if you're being bullied, it's not a nice place to be. And
no.
It does really undermine your whole self-esteem, your sense of self, your self-worth, everything. And so the mental health of that person needs to be assessed. If possible, there can be some mediation. Sometimes it can be that the bully isn't even aware of the impact of their behaviour on the bullied person. And so it might be that simply saying, well, you know, when there are these things that you're doing, or you know, so-and-so said that, you know, you're doing these things, and you know, they're having this really profound effect on them. Can we think of some other ways to get your message across or to behave? And this, if it's just downright someone's just being mean, it's a case of just, you know, there needs to be some disciplinary action that is implemented. It's tricky and it's not nice, but it does need to be faced. In the same way as any sort of abusive behaviours need to be faced, bullying needs to be faced as well. It's very important that, as you said before, that there is policy in the workplace, and that it's more than just having a policy. It's having a policy that is just open, that you know everybody's aware of that policy, that they know that it exists, that they know that bullying isn't allowed in this workplace, that it's openly discussed as well, that it isn't just, oh, yeah, we've got the policy and that... we've got our policy and so we don't need to do anything more about it. It is something that needs to be reviewed and ensure that the workplace does in fact have procedures for how to deal with it. So it's insufficient to just have policy, there does need to be procedures.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if it was a patient that came in talking about being bullied, it would be well advised for the GP to recommend to the patient to keep a diary of what's going on. And I think in all cases that's actually very helpful as well, to keep a diary of the bullying behaviours. And I know some people can find that and just in itself therapeutic. And certainly one of my colleagues who started documenting the cases, the instances where she felt that she was being bullied, simply keeping that diary was like, right, no, this isn't, I don't need to put up with this.
It's a bit empowering for the person just to be able to get that down on paper, I'd imagine.
That's right. That's exactly right. So yes, it's not just in my head, it's these things are actually occurring. And then there could be some work cover claims and the GP might need to, if it was a patient being bullied. I think I've moved away from your question a bit, but.
No, that's fine. It was leading into my next one, sort of, you know, obviously GPs will be the first port of call for patients who are experiencing workplace bullying from time to time. Obviously not everyone will bring it up. And I think really the same principles would apply, you know, to giving advice to a patient in terms of managing that situation as would if the GP themselves was being bullied.
Exactly. Well, one of the critical things, I think, is that the bullied person needs to be reassured that bullying isn't acceptable, that it's illegal, then everybody has the right to a safe workplace and a workplace that is free of where bullying is occurring isn't a safe workplace. And so they do have the legal right to do something about it, and I think that can be very empowering. If there was any violence occurring, then that's potentially assault, and yeah, that's illegal, and the GP could suggest to the patient to go to the police. There's also, police may also need to be involved if the bullied patient is less than 16, or that may constitute child abuse. This is a bit tricky because there's different ages in across Australia and different jurisdictions. But
yes, in terms of what's mandatory reporting and...
That's exactly right. But I guess that if it's suspected child abuse, then that's the case for the police as well.
Yes,
The GP could advise their patient to become familiar with their workplace anti-bullying policies and the complaints procedures. So as I was saying before, as we discussed before, it's insufficient to just have the policy. There need to be the procedures as well. So the bullied person needs to be aware of, what can they do? Who can they go to talk to? Is it their line manager? But what if the line manager is the bully? So who's the next person up? So go looking at that. The human resources policies around who are the people to talk to in these sort of cases.
Yes, and the patient may well need support through that process, because I would imagine that just the process of you know, initiating a complaint like that could be very stressful in itself.
Yes. Yep. I think it's hard. I guess that in every case would be different. And in the end, it may be that the bullied person does need to want to change jobs. A bullied person could change jobs without making any complaint or after making a complaint. And I suspect that for their mental health, making a complaint and then changing jobs would be the better option than just changing jobs. Mm-hmm. At least you've done something, you've taken some control. And I think that's a really important point, that the bullied person can feel they've got no control in the relationship. So any step that they can take to actually gain some control has got to be beneficial.
If they ever do get around to establishing the recommended national advisory service, that would obviously be a very good resource, and GPs could direct patients to that should it come into being.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's currently a couple of good websites, the Australian Human Rights Commission, and which provides a lot of information about all sorts of human rights issues. And it was nice seeing that workplace bullying was actually under the remit of the Human Rights Commission, because it does show that, it's part of our human right to be safe in our workplace.
Most of us spend a lot of time there, don't we?
We certainly do, Sarah. We certainly do.
So it doesn't want to be a horrible place to be, that's sure.
Exactly right. And another really good website was Reach Out, and that was a website that focuses on youth mental health services. And as I said before, that a lot of bullying occurs, there's a power differential, so often younger people have the least power within a workplace.
Yes, but more vulnerable.
That's exactly right.
All right, Deb, well, that's a great move through the article. Are there any sort of take-home points that you'd like to get across to listeners on this topic?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. There are. The main take-home points I'd like to say is that bullying, workplace bullying, is unacceptable. It is, nobody should be subjected to workplace bullying, and everybody has the right to a safe workplace. If you are being bullied, or if you know of someone who is being bullied in the workplace, then recommend that they do something about it, that they do proceed with some sort of action.
Yeah, well, that sounds like very, very sensible advice, and hopefully we can all sort of take a look at our own workplaces and make sure that we've got things in place there as well.
Yep, and that was another, as you were just saying, so it's all of our responsibility. It's not just for the HR department or anything like that. If we see a colleague being bullied, or if we're aware of a colleague being bullied, then we've actually got the responsibility, at least the moral responsibility, if not the legal responsibility, to stand up and say, no, this isn't acceptable behaviour, to not join in any way by either silence or by sort of smiling at it, like some sort of ha-ha, stupid joke, or what's supposed to be a joke about somebody, or in any way to not perpetuate that sort of putting down of a colleague.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Deb, well, thank you very much again for your time and a really interesting and important discussion.
My pleasure, Sarah.